Hi everyone, and welcome to Keyframe, the Geek Show's dedicated animation podcast. My name's Rob, and joining me today is Mark.
Hello!
Yeah, we're missing a Tucky today, because he's unfortunately got personal things to deal with.
Yeah, unfortunately. But so it's us, Big Squad.
But we wish him and everybody else very, 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 very good feelings and hugs and love and everything. All the good stuff.
All the good stuff.
Yes. Anyway, Mark, how are you?
I'm not bad. MVM have finally delivered Monster Musume to me, so I am quite happy right now.
Yes. I will not question your happiness.
Came out on the same day as Monster Hunter. Just don't get them mixed up.
Actually, these days, it's pretty difficult not to get them mixed up. Have you seen some of the characters of Monster Hunter now?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely appealing to some of them fans, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I look at Monster Hunter and I look at some of the characters, I think the character designer from Senran Kagura has been visiting, hasn't he?
He just popped round for a chat and just interfered with all of the models.
Yes. Either that or when they were making the game, you know, when it came to the body physics, they hired the guy who does the body physics for Dead or Alive.
possibly. I'm just trying to think of what else Capcom's got, which actually might be kind of similar. Street Fighter. They use the body physics for Chun-Li on the Monster Hunters.
Does Chun-Li have body physics?
She's got thighs. I don't know. I haven't played a Street Fighter game in a long time.
I haven't either. I'm more Tekken than I am Street Fighter, I'll be honest. Tekken and Soul Calibur. For me.
Yeah, definitely Soul Calibur. And there's a new one. Hooray. Finally.
See, I know everybody talks about Street Fighter and Guilty Gear and all the rest of them, you know, the 2D fighters, and I know people talk about skill and timing and movesets and everything, and I'm just like, I don't care. I just want to play a game. Can we not just play a game? Please?
And I just button mash.
Yeah, but if you button mash and then admit to button mash, and then they'll basically they'll tear into you. They'll start calling you all sorts of names, which is hilarious. I had one lad trying to do that to me, and he was sitting right next to me. This was at an event, and then I stood up, and since I was like 2.5 times the man he was,
you outmanned his manliness.
Well, no, he was he had all the muscle tone of an elastic band. I'm sorry, but I could have snapped him in half and used his head as a ballpoint pen.
His power comes from the wrist.
Yes.
And we're back to Monster Musume again. Anyways, moving on.
See, we're good at this. We know what we're doing. No, we don't.
We've been doing this for I've been doing this for a year now. I know what I'm doing.
Oh, yes, with the Earthy, wasn't it?
More or less, yeah.
Anyway. Oscar nominations have come out and managed to upset pretty much every single anime fan on the planet again for another year. See, I know that America is like the great melting pot of cultures and everything like that, but that just then says to me, well, you should be less xenophobic then. You know, you should be more welcoming of things that come from outside the country and not treat them as, say, independent. Looking at you, Annie Awards, national industry being treated as independent.
Yeah, it's a bit of a shame, really. I mean, I think everybody in the anime community took a look at the nominations and had a bit of a heavy sigh when it came to it.
Yeah. The nominations, 3 of them deserve to be there, 2 of them do not deserve to be there. The 3 that deserve to be there are Loving Vincent, The Breadwinner, and, to a lesser degree, Coco. I say to a lesser degree because we're going to talk a bit more about Coco in a bit, so we'll go over that, all right? The 2 that really should not be there, Ferdinand and The Boss Baby.
Yeah, I don't know why these are here, really. I mean, I could understand maybe one of them getting in, but both of them being in when we don't have any anime representation.
I'm going to say, screw the anime. You had The Girl Without Hands. That was one that could have gone in. You had that Psychonauts one, which is another that could have gone in. You had so many that were better than The Boss Baby and Ferdinand that could have gone in.
Oh yeah, there was loads. There was a it was a pretty health choice of representation.
Exactly, and the one that really deserved to be in there, A Silent Voice, doesn't even get a sniff.
Well, the thing that kind of got me is how A Silent Voice didn't get in, yet there was actually a live action film about a deaf girl.
Yeah,
which the news reporters and everyone was proper singing its praises for. I'm like, yeah. It's been done before in the animation section. How come that gets praised, but A Silent Voice gets snubbed for Boss Baby?
So, here's my advice to all of the anime fans and all of the people who want better representation and more recognition for films like A Silent Voice. Write to the BBC and complain. Say, you focused on this, but it's already been done here. Why the hell didn't you mention that film?
Yeah.
Actually call them out on it.
Exactly.
Because it's all well and good harping on about it on the internet, but if you're not willing to put your money where your mouth is, then all it is bluster.
Yeah, exactly. Right, I can't even remember what that thing's called, what the BBC have, where they always have the irate...
Points of view.
Points of view.
God, yeah, some of them are great. Oh, God. Oh, the anime section of Points of View would be amazing.
You spoke about this, but you didn't speak about A Silent Voice. How dare you, sirs?
Dear BBC, I want to complain about Super Saiyans. Do Super Saiyans actually have gods? Can Super Saiyans become gods? And what is the limit of a Super Saiyan god's power? Are they omniscient, omnipresent, and all-powerful? Or are they just gods in the way that, say...
You know, is Godzilla like a real god? Yes or no? Thanks, BBC.
Dear BBC, I didn't understand this bit of Sword Art Online. Could you explain it to me?
Oh, dear. They'll know what that is as well, that's the thing.
Oh, we could have a field day with this. An anime point of view.
Oh, maybe we should actually have that as a segment of Keyframe one time.
Oh.
Right in for your anime points of view.
No, we'd be here all day, man.
We're going to just have it as a special episode.
Yeah. Well, not the anime version, the animation version, because then I can say, dear BBC, why the hell has Stewie Griffin the movie been nominated for an Oscar? Because that's what the Boss Baby is, let's be fair. It's Stewie Griffin the movie, isn't it?
I thought it was Donald Trump baby version.
Which is Stewie Griffin, isn't it?
Possibly.
I mean, remember the episode with the broccoli? The broccoli must die.
Oh, that was very early Family Guy, wasn't it?
Yeah, when it was actually funny.
Good old times.
But yeah, Ferdinand, seriously? A film about a bull?
It's more the fact that John Cena's voicing the bull.
I mean, at least Coco actually had some kind of substance. Yeah, but even Coco pales in comparison to The Book of Life, which came out in 2014, which is basically a very, very similar film to Coco. You know, when you get right down to it, it's a musical fantasy, a group of detention students on a secret museum tour, and it's all about, it's all about the Day of the Dead in Mexico, so it's basically exactly the same film. But it's so much better than Coco, and I like Coco. I thought Coco was a good movie.
Yeah, I went to see it the other night, and I really enjoyed it. Does it deserve to be in the top five? I'd say maybe.
That's what I said.
To be honest, for me, Coco being in there isn't the issue. It's more the other two.
Yeah, well, that's why I said Coco to a much lesser degree than Loving Vincent and The Breadwinner. Coco deserves to be in there to a much lesser degree, but still deserves to be in there. The other two, I don't think, should be in there. But we'll come back to that, all that, in a minute. But something else, though, moving on from the Oscar nominations, let's move on to something else. A trailer for an interesting animated film called Bilal, which is apparently a new breed of hero. Now, Bilal is part of this thing that Barajun Entertainment and Vertical Entertainment are doing. It's part of their campaign called The Power of One. And this is kind of loosely based on true events of an African slave called Bilal ibn Rabah, who is a man whose story is apparently similar to that of Martin Luther King Jr. He believed in the unity of mankind and equality of all people, and he was actually a slave. The whole setting is kind of this Arabic setting, but it looks a lot more mature than a lot of the CG animated films that we've seen coming out of the West recently.
Definitely. The character design and everything just felt that it was really geared towards adults rather than kids, really.
Yeah. And the action as well. I mean, that whole bit where the raiders are coming, for example, right at the beginning, and then the bit where he's actually tied to that post in that hut and he's being, you know, beaten repeatedly. That's not something that you see in a CG movie in the West.
No, it's not. It's well, really, when you think about it, CG movies in the West, they're more or less aimed for kids.
Yeah.
Nearly. I can't think of many off the top of my head that isn't.
Yeah. And this is one of the reasons why I wanted to bring up this trailer, because it just seems like if it does well, and I hope it does, you know, it might be a game changer for CG animation.
Yeah.
Because when I say CG animation in the West, I don't mean stuff coming out of France and Germany and that. I mean stuff coming out of America. Because America!
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Is Isle of Dogs coming out from America?
Isle of Dogs is Wes Anderson, and Wes Anderson just does his own thing. All right?
Yeah.
Nobody basically bothers with Wes Anderson. Say, Hollywood is just a classroom. Wes Anderson is the strange kid in the back who's basically doing science experiments.
He's the weird protagonist kid who's sitting there looking out the window.
No, but he grows up to be MacGyver, right? That's the thing. He grows up to be MacGyver, and that's Wes Anderson.
But, I mean, it's true. I mean, let's face it, if you look at a lot of stuff that's coming out of, say, well, I'm just going to say Disney, and Disney slash Pixar, a lot of the animation coming out from them, they're not pushing any boundaries.
No.
I mean, Coco looked nice, but it looked nice, and it just kind of felt like a standard Disney film. I didn't feel well, like it was...
Yeah, it's very family-friendly. I mean, the story is kid gets trapped in an alternate reality type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Then he's got to go on this quest to kind of find his way home and blah, 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 and solve emotional stuff in the process, and it's all very emotional. It has lots of feelings, you know, but still, the Book of Life did it first and did it better. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, Coco was good. It has a lot of issues, but it's
I'll be honest, it's a good film. It's a good family film, and it will appeal to a lot of people. But I preferred the experimental nature of the Book of Life. I preferred the animation of the Book of Life. I preferred the fact that the Book of Life, I found it much less patronizing to me than Coco. I thought Coco was going out of its way to explain things to me that I already knew.
Yeah, I mean, my issue, I'm assuming we're just talking about Coco now.
Yeah.
My biggest issue with Coco was that I felt the kid was really unlikable.
Yeah, he was.
It's like, the rest of his family seemed to be hardworking. They were working their asses off, really, and to put food on the table. And he's just like, I don't want to do that. I want to be a musician. I mean, he's basically given a job. He's given some kind of secure future. And he's just like, I don't want to do that. I'm going to run off and be a musician.
Do you know what my answer to that is? Sorry, my response to that is bloody millennials. You know, think about it. Coco is a movie designed for millennials. You don't need to do everything that everyone else is doing because you're special.
Exactly. And I mean, yeah, I mean, the family kind of were a little bit harsh on him.
Yeah, but here's the thing. When it comes to putting food on the table, when it comes to actually eating to survive, or eating to put a roof over your head or something like that. And this is one of the reasons why a lot of people disparage millennials. It's because a lot of the time millennials don't actually understand what it means to pay bills and pay taxes and actually struggle financially.
Yeah.
And this is one of the reasons why they get disparaged so much. If they actually understood that, then they would take a step back and say, okay, bills have to be paid first, because the world doesn't work on dreams and fanciful emotions. The world works on money.
Exactly. And, yeah, it's nice for him to have a dream, but he just kind of like...
Yeah, work towards it. Save up for it. Work hard for it. Because,
exactly.
You know...
The whole thing is just like, the whole of the moral of the story by the guy he looks up to is just like, seize your moment, and just like, but everything he kind of did in the film was kind of just laid out in front of him. It's like, oh, he's a good musician, but he's never picked up a guitar or anything in his life. He's just kind of like, he's good because he's the protagonist. I mean, yeah, we saw a brief scene where he's practicing and stuff like that, but it's like...
Yeah, but this is my point. Yeah. This is why I prefer the Book of Life, because, again, that I find very patronising. I don't see any effort, I don't see any work, and I'm one of those people who believes that talent can only take you so far, and also an excess of talent makes you lazy. Yeah. If you find something easy to do, you become lazy because you're not having to work at it. But if you are struggling, this is why hard work will always beat talent. Doesn't matter how talented you are, how much of a genius you are, except for maths. Maths geniuses are, that's voodoo. That's some voodoo going on there.
But yeah, I mean, there was a few other things that I kind of didn't like where they made the big thing about, I don't even remember the character's name, where you see him disappear. He's forgotten about, and he hands him the guitar.
Yeah.
And then later on, the kid just kind of discards the guitar and is like, oh, well, you obviously didn't care about that guy who give you his, like, last possession and stuff like that.
Yeah. Way to cherish someone's last possession.
Yeah, it was very much, oh, yeah, these are important characters, but the rest of them, we don't care about them. You're not part of the family. We don't care about you.
Yeah. Which actually, interestingly enough, leads me on to a completely different film, which also Coco reminded me of. I don't know if you've seen it. Have you ever heard of a movie called Oblivion Island, Haruka and the Magic Mirror?
I've heard of it, but I've never seen it.
Right, Oblivion Island was production IG going, Disney and Pixar and DreamWorks, they're doing all this CG stuff. Let's show them what we can do. And so they did. And they made a movie called Oblivion Island. Basically, it's a story about things that you forget. It's a story about items that you forget. And you know how rich Japanese folklore and Japanese religion is with all these little spirits and all these little oddities, yeah?
Yeah.
And in Oblivion Island, the whole idea is that when you forget about something, when you just put it to one side and you've forgotten its existence, and then you go, oh, what about that? And then you start looking for it, but you can't find it. That's because something, some spirit, some creature has taken it away to another place. And that place is Oblivion Island, the place where forgotten things go. And Haruka has a mirror that belonged to her mom. And she's basically grown up, and her mom's passed away years ago. And she's forgotten about the mirror. But then one day she remembers the mirror. And then she sees something take in the mirror. And she follows it. And it goes to this spring, this little well thing in the forest at a shrine. And the creatures disappeared into it, and she gets pulled in as well. And she ends up at Oblivion Island, and she has to find a way home. So she's got to find her mother's mirror and find a way home. And it has one of the most amazing stuffed toys in animation. And I'm including Paddington in that.
I'll have to look into that. Is this a... Do we have a release over here for us?
It came out years ago. So, yeah. So now you've seen the trailer, Mark, what do you think?
Yeah, it looks really good. I mean, wow, that's CG.
And that came out what year?
That came out, well, looking on the DVD release, it was 2012, I believe.
2009 it originally came out.
2009. Oh, the English release, I think, was 2012. But yeah.
So, this is my point. There are things that came out well before Coco that kind of cover a similar story, and this is one of the reasons why I think Coco's a good movie. It just didn't quite cut it for me.
Yeah, I mean, for me, Coco, I really enjoyed it. Like I said, it had a few issues. It had a lot of scenes that I really enjoyed as well. It was just kind of one of those films. It was predictable, and it was just kind of standard Disney. I don't think it stood out whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not Frozen by any measure, is it?
To be honest, I'd still probably say it's probably one of the better ones since Wreck-It Ralph, to be honest.
Yeah, but Wreck-It Ralph wasn't that great either.
I really enjoyed it.
Wreck-It Ralph is basically a nostalgia fest for anybody who likes video games.
Yeah, that helps too, but...
yeah, but It's a nostalgia fest for anybody who liked video games around the 90s. But for those of us who grew up with video games during the 80s, was it hella nostalgia fest?
Yeah.
Where's my Manic Miner and Chuck Rock and stuff like that?
You got Q-Bert.
Yeah, Q-Bert. Yeah. Oh, I forgot. Pac-Man. Oh, yeah.
Was Pac-Man in it?
Can't remember.
Oh, the ghost was, isn't it?
The ghost was, yeah. Oh, so, yeah, Pac-Man was in it.
It's been that long, I can't even remember who was even in it.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. I thought Rocket Rolf was, it was all right. But I wouldn't say it was the best Disney or Pixar movie.
No, I wouldn't say it's the best. It was...
And I'm sorry, but that scene in Toy Story 3 where they're all holding hands and they're, you know, they basically accepted that they're going to die.
Was that before or after Wreck-It Ralph, though?
I can't remember, but I'm sorry. In comparison to Wreck-It Ralph, to the entirety of Wreck-It Ralph, did any part of Wreck-It Ralph have that much emotion in one scene?
No, Wreck-It Ralph was pretty safe. You didn't expect anything to really die.
My point exactly.
Maybe that'll happen in the sequel, where he goes on the internet and gets stuck in a porn site.
No!
Well, the thing is, the new Wreck-It Ralph takes the internet or something like that. So they're going to make a porn joke.
Oh, God, no. Wreck-It Ralph takes the internet is not a good idea. It's going to be cats and porn. That's all it's going to be.
Wreck-It Ralph's just like, Sonic, I know that. Oh, no, the Sonic fandom.
You know for a fact that they're not going to go down that route. Although, if they had Wreck-It Ralph wandering around going, what's a furry?
Oh.
Sorry, what's slash fiction?
Oh, there's going to be a thing where he just walks in and just like, what are you doing with Fix-It Felix, Ralph? Stop it.
So, I need to head down past the Ya-Oi fan fiction part, do I?
It's probably sort of Wreck-It Ralph stops the internet history from being deleted.
No, it's fun to stay at the Y-A-I-O. Y-A-O-I, sorry, yeah.
I was just saying, well, Y-A-O.
I got it wrong, but you know what I mean. Oh, God. Tucky, if you listen to this, do not do that dance at Sonny Con.
Oh, I'm going to have to make him do it now.
The Y-A-O-I dance.
The Y-A. Well, saying that, he's not going to have to do it. I'm going to have to do it because I'm the one with the panel. Oh, anyways, moving onwards from Coco and Wreck-It Ralph's slash fiction adventure.
We are definitely calling this episode that.
We can't not.
No. Anyway, you had something that was kind of linked to Coco, in a sense.
So, yeah, similar to Coco, I had Recon from MVM.
Okay. Now, Recon, I'm assuming, is short for something.
Yes, but I don't know what. And no, it's not anywhere related to ReZero or ReLife or any of the other titles with Re in front of it.
Well, let me see if I can find out what Recon is short for. Because
I was trying to figure that out as well. What's actually...
So, Recon. Right. Recon is short for... Recon. It's literally just called Recon.
Oh, well. There's nothing to do with that word. I don't even think it's even mentioned in the series. So this is a series about a young girl who can see dead people. She's always been able to see dead people. She can talk with the spirits. She can interact with them. And all through her life, she's kind of been perceived as the oddball, because obviously when she's at school, she'll sit there and talk to some of the spirits, or when she's on her way home, she'll play with the spirits of the dead children, and obviously she'll interact with them. So all through her life, she's kind of been classified as the oddball. She's a little bit weird, that nobody really understands her. However, she starts getting a few friends who realize that when they're around the main girl, Narumi Inoue, she's called, when they're around her, they kind of realize that they can start seeing the spirits too.
Yeah.
Her best friend, or best friend throughout the series, is scared to death of ghosts or spirits or practically anything. Whereas some of her other friends are kind of a little bit more relaxed and they realize they can see the spirits through cell phones or cameras. And it's kind of just like a slice of life kind of series where the girls just meet all the various spirits and kind of just have to help them out in their own way. And there's not really much else to it apart from that.
Okay.
Now, the first thing I kind of related this to was Yu Yu Hakusho.
Yeah.
And whereas that kind of took more of an action kind of thing, this was definitely more relaxed. She befriends the spirits and the spirits kind of just stick around. Very few of them pass on to the other side because there's something tying them back for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And she tries her best to help them, but obviously she in some cases she literally can't do anything for them and just wants to instead make sure that they're at least accepted in the world that they're in. It was an interesting series. I picked this up. This was a blind buy. This was in one of those mystery boxes. And honestly, when I watched it, by the end of the first disc, which was episodes 1 to 9, I was ready to put it on the shelf and just say, that's it. However, the last 3 episodes, or the last 4 episodes,
yeah,
on the last disc, were actually really good. It's really because it stops being so episodic. It's building towards something, which is the main character wants to meet her mother, and all of the spirits obviously help out so the mother can come back and meet her, and then she loses her spirit, her ability to see the spirits, and it's about her trying to get it back. It's quite emotional, but it's kind of like the same way as how Coco was emotional, where she kind of finally got to meet her family and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Now, this isn't a series for everybody. The animation is pretty basic, and the animation looked quite old for considering this series actually only came out in 2015. Now, the thing that really got me annoyed with this series is the other main character, her best friend.
Yeah.
Now, as I mentioned previously, she is scared of spirits or ghosts or anything, but she never really grows up. There's one episode where she plays with the spirits of the dead children and she kind of comes to accept them. But nearly every other spirit in the series, she really overreacts and kind of gets to the point where she's kind of really horrible to her friends just because she's scared of them. And to me, if I saw something scary, if I saw a ghost and I was talking to the ghost for whatever reason, and I helped this ghost be happy with what his life was in the current world.
Yeah.
And the very next episode, I see the ghost again, and all of a sudden, I'm scared again. And this happens throughout the entire series. She'll see the same ghost over and over, but she'll completely overreact. And it's like, no, it doesn't really work like that.
Because at some point, you get desensitized to this sort of thing.
Exactly. And especially when the ghosts on the most part are all friendly. The one that kind of they're all scared of is like a samurai ghost.
Yeah.
Where he was obviously, legend had it, he was like, he killed so many people and then he wasn't allowed to go to heaven because of that. But when it goes throughout the series, he actually is really nice.
Yeah.
It's just because obviously he had to do what he had to do back in them days and obviously paid the price for it, but it didn't make him a bad person, but she overreacts, and every single time it's like, no, it's just like, you're getting annoying. And even on the last episode, there's an OVA episode where they all hang out and go to the park, and it's just still like, no, I'm scared of the ghosts, I can't deal with this, and it's just like, no, you're not a very good main character, really.
Wasn't this adapted from, like, a 4-comma manga?
Yeah, it was. It was, quite interestingly, it was a 4-comma manga. The flow of each episode is actually quite good. You know, where normally if you see something like Lucky Star or Pop Team Epic, you can kind of tell that it was very short stories pieced together.
Yeah.
Whereas this, you wouldn't tell it was a 4-comma manga.
How long are the episodes? How long are the episodes?
Full length.
Full length? Wow.
About 23 minutes.
See, what surprises me about this is the fact that they have this kind of story as a 4-comma manga. There are bits of it that remind me of a manga that I've been reading called Renai Kaiden Sayoko-san. And I might have mentioned this to you before. It's basically about a young lady called Sayoko, who's very, very kind, but very solitary. And she's always wearing a kimono. And she has certain extremely powerful supernatural abilities. She can't just see ghosts. She frees them from their places of death and agrees to let them haunt her instead. So, you know the night parade? She's kind of a human night parade.
Oh.
Right? But she accidentally gets knocked over by a guy called Inaba, who's a poor college student, and, you know, he basically is very apologetic and everything like that, and, she was very understanding about the accident, and she even gave him money for, you know, helping him out until he found another job. And basically, she's fallen in love with him. He doesn't know when she becomes slightly stalkerish, but in a really funny and cute way. And she's got all of these ghosts trying to tell her what to do.
I think I vaguely remember. I don't know. Is it quite... Has it been going on for quite some time, was
it? It's got 54 chapters. It was out from, like, 2009 for a bit.
Ah, so it's a monthly one, is it?
Yeah, I think it's a monthly one. The thing is, it's got, you know, the whole underwear theft thing?
Uh-huh.
It's got a great twist on that, because she accidentally steals Inaba's boxes and doesn't know how to give them back.
But, I mean, this kind of storyline, it's been done to death, really, hasn't it? There's a lot of series that's been doing it. Obviously, like I said, we've got that one you were talking about. There's Yu Yu Hakusho.
Yeah.
Bleach, to an extent, was like early on. There's that new one as well, isn't there, where the girl... Is it The Ghost in the Hot Springs or something like that?
I don't know.
I can't remember. It's getting an anime later this year, so...
Is that the one where the guy's reincarnated as a hot spring?
No. It's not. I can't remember what it's called, but it's in Jump at the moment, but it's coming out later this year in anime, so
There's Yokai Apartment and various others. Thing is, after a certain point with anything, you become desensitized to it, so...
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, this was a series that I didn't know anything about. I gave it a chance. Like I said, at the end of the first disc, I was really tempted to not bother. I was going to trade it in. The last few episodes really saved it, and honestly, I'll keep this in my collection rather than trading it in. So it's worth a shot if you can find it cheap enough.
Yeah. My turn, is it?
Mm-hmm.
And so we go from Rikan, which, what would you say is your final opinion of Rikan?
It's enjoyable. Stick with it. You'll get something out of it. It's not the best series. It's not the worst. It's just one of those nice slice of life ones that you'll probably get something out of.
Yep. From that, we go to Stiff Upper Lip, Cups of Tea, and Nuclear War.
Oh, man. If only Tucky was here, he would be doing impressions by now.
Yeah, the thing is, if I say Stiff Upper Lip, Cups of Tea, and Nuclear War, it can only be one thing, because there's nothing else like it. It can only be When the Wind Blows, which is actually, it's actually come out. It's been reissued by BFI on the 22nd of January in a dual format. So it's in Blu-ray and DVD. Right. Now, this originally came out, I think it was during the 80s.
I think it was very late 80s.
Yeah, I think it was 1985 this originally came out. And this is a brilliant, brilliant film. And I would put this right up there with the likes of Barefoot Gen, because even though this is completely fictional, This is very much an anti-war film. When the Wind Blows tells the story of Jim and Hilda Bloggs, who are voiced by Sir John Mills and Dame Peggy Ashcroft, and they're a middle-aged couple who've put their faith in the government as they prepare for a nuclear war, and the countdown begins, they roll up the sleeves and follow the advice contained in the real-life official booklet of the time, Protect and Survive. They whitewash the windows and build a shelter out of doors and pillows, take the washing in and put away packets of ginger nuts, a tin of pineapple chunks, and a good supply of tea.
Oh, sounds very British.
It is. It's very, very British. Now, some of the best bits about this, because the animation has dated. The character designs, because this is based on the graphic novel by Raymond Briggs, and I've read the graphic novel as well. And the character designs are very rounded. It's a great story. And this was actually directed by Jimmy Murakami, who is an American Japanese. He was born in America, but his parents are both Japanese. And he was born just before the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, you know, a couple of years before. And this is the thing. He's been around the world directing animation, everything like that. He's done all sorts of paintings. And he also directed a sci-fi movie, which nobody else but people in my generation remember, because it came out just after Star Wars, or around the time of Star Wars, called Battle Beyond the Stars. And you know, it's an awful film. But I kind of love it. It's so bad.
One of those guilty pleasures.
It's no, there's nothing to feel guilty of. If you watch a trailer of Battle Beyond the Stars, then you'll know there's nothing to feel ashamed of. There's a kind of glory in liking this awful film.
Is it like Monster Musume, where you can't feel bad watching it?
No. In Monster Musume, you can definitely feel bad watching it. I have this thing, right? If you can't watch it with your parents or your grandparents, then you need to start asking questions. Even Saw, you can watch with your parents, because your parents are old enough to watch Saw.
Well, your parents are old enough to watch Monster Musume, it doesn't mean they want to.
Exactly, my point, exactly. You won't get funny looks, though, if you sit with your parents and watch Saw. Everyone will be horrified at the same time. But if you watch Monster Musume in front of your parents, you're going to get some funny looks.
Possibly, but I think if I put any anime movie on, I'll get some funny looks. I try putting a silent voice on for my parents, and they were just like, no, we're not putting that on. We'll not have any of that.
Yeah, eventually they'll come around. Anyway, back to When the Wind Blows. This actually is a glorious film, and I would recommend this to anybody. What was that one that was out on BBC called? It was shortlisted for an Oscar nomination as well, wasn't it?
Was it Ethel and Ernest?
Yeah, it was Ethel and Ernest. Yeah, you're right. Ernest, yeah. Yeah, it was Ethel and Ernest. This kind of has that vibe of Britishness about it. And the voice acting, Sir John Mills is brilliant as Jim, and Peggy Ashcroft is amazing as Hilda. And the two of them are like, you know, they come across just from the voice acting as a couple who've been married for decades, right?
Mm.
And the tragedy of this is the belief in the government, the belief in that the government know what they're doing. And this came out at a time when the government really didn't know what they were doing. People really didn't understand the true horror of nuclear weapons, even though it had been like 30 years, 40 years since Hiroshima. But at the time this is set, nuclear war was very much on the cards. We had the Cold War, everything like that. And so the effect when the bomb goes off, that is, the animation for that is, because it's all washed out colours and it's all kind of monochrome, but not black and white monochrome. It goes from red monochrome, you know, red and black monochrome with different shades of red to kind of a yellowy brown monochrome. So it's like a yellowy brown and black. And then you have, you know, white and black, and then you have other different ones. And, you know, there's very little in the way of sound. It's all musical at that point. Very powerful, kind of almost a techno type music as you have all of this destruction happening. And then there's this amazing shot where it's following the path of the wind all the way to Jim and Hilda's house. There's a beautiful bit where Jim comes home right at the beginning, and on the gate is written Jim Hilda, which is a combination of their two names. But yeah, the path of the wind follows all the way to the house and goes in through the window, and then it goes into this little set, this little toy set that they've done, and they blow the windows in. And what you have is this kind of combination of hand-drawn animation and actual sets, but very small sets that can fit the animation. And this is one of those films where you'll be sad by the end. You'll be very sad by the end, okay? But not so much in the way that Grave of the Fireflies was sad. This is one of those ones where you'll be sad at the situation and not just sad for the people. You won't just be sad for the characters. You'll be saying, how can that be allowed to happen? How can the government fail people like that? You'll question things. You'll seriously question things. And that's one of the great things about this film. It does make you think. It makes you wonder what would happen, because this is something that didn't happen.
Yeah, it sounds quite interesting. I'm getting very vibes of In This Corner of the World from it as well.
It is a little bit In This Corner of the World, but from far before. I wouldn't actually be surprised if In This Corner of the World was influenced a little bit by this film. Yeah. Because the actual bomb is not the final thing. The actual bomb happens around the middle of the film, and then what you're dealing with is the after effects, the nuclear fallout, and that's the bit that's heartbreaking. That's the bit where the stiff upper lip really comes in. That's the bit where they really do soldier on. And that's the bit where you actually start saying, why is no one helping them?
Mm-hmm.
I would recommend this to any fan of animation. It's dated a little bit. It's still absolutely watchable, and it's still very, very memorable. It's got some great extras on this, and this is the kind of thing that I want to see anime companies doing when it comes to putting out DVDs with extras. This is the kind of stuff that this has. Just have a listen, Mark. You'll be impressed. So, special features on this, aside from being presented in high definition and standard definition, because you've got the Blu-ray and the DVD, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got audio commentary with the first assistant editor, Joe Fordham, and film historian Nick Redman. You've got a 77-minute documentary called Jimmy Murakami, Non-Alien, which is all about the film's director. You've got a 25-minute documentary called The Wind and the Bomb, which is all about the making of When the Wind Blows, and it features interviews with the producer, John Coates, the director, Jimmy T. Murakami, and the writer, Raymond Briggs. There is a 14-minute interview with Raymond Briggs, where he discusses When the Wind Blows and his other works. You've got Protect and Survive, which is a 50-minute public information film designed to be broadcast when a nuclear attack was imminent. You've got isolated music and effects tracks, and an illustrated booklet with a new introduction by Raymond Briggs, an essay by executive producer Ian Harvey, writing by Jess Stewart, Claire Kitson, and Bella Todd, and full film credits. And this even has an introductory song called When the Wind Blows, written for it by David Bowie.
Oh, that's a very impressive stuff, because, I mean, let's face it, I mean, especially when we look on anime, unless you're buying a collector's edition or something, you don't get much.
And all of that is for an 84-minute film.
Yeah. So, sounds good. I might actually pick it up myself, to be honest.
No, I would heartily recommend this. If you're a fan of animation like we are, then this deserves to be on your shelf. It's a wonderful British film. It's a wonderful piece of British animation. It's a memorable piece of British animation. It's a memorable piece of animated storytelling from this country. And I would put it in the same league. And I will honestly say, I know people over in Japan who are older, and they have watched this as well, and they've also had the same opinion. Some of them actually cried by the end of this film. One of my mates who works for one of the newspapers over in Japan, he watched this film years ago. I suggested he watch it because he was the one who introduced me to Barefoot Ken. So I suggested When the Wind Blows in return. And he said he watched it with his parents, and his parents were crying by the end of it. And so was he.
So yeah, that's a... Definitely sounds interesting. I think if you're a fan of if you're like more anime, if you're a fan of Barefoot Ken or In This Corner of the World, or maybe Grave of the Fireflies. I think you would get a lot of mileage out of this one as well.
Yeah, What's Left Behind and various other films like that. If you're a fan of those sorts of films, then yeah. I mean, it does a great job of mixing live action stuff and these little sets that have been purposely built for the film and hand-drawn animation. It's got some amazing dialogue. It's got some amazing voice acting. And it's just an altogether wonderful, wonderful, but heart-wrenching at times film.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Yeah, I definitely recommend it. Also, the intro by Bowie just, it brought tears to my eyes. I'll be honest, no, it seriously did when I put it on, because I didn't read any of the blurb that came with it. I just put it straight on, and then it started with Bowie singing, and I was choking up because I miss that man so much.
Ah,
now seriously, I am a huge Bowie fan, and I always will be, and I'm proud of it.
Nothing to be ashamed of there.
Imagine it though. I'm sitting there, and I've just put this on. And all of a sudden, it's Bowie's voice coming through, and he's singing When the Wind Blows, and I'm just kind of... I'm already getting choked up.
So it hasn't even started yet.
It's a good thing they stopped him after the introduction, otherwise I would have been a wreck by the end of the film. So, I believe that's a kind of recommendation for Recon, and a definite recommendation for When the Wind Blows.
Yeah, we've had a pretty solid day.
Yeah, and also, I think a solid recommendation for Coco.
Oh, yeah. It's on at the cinema. I mean, there's not much else on at the moment, so go have a pop to your local cinema and have a watch of it.
Yeah. Anyway, that's us for today, so we'll see you all next week. All of our shows are available on Apple Podcasts and Audioboom, and if you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. What's our Twitter again?
At Keyframe Podcast.
Yes. Or you can find us on The Geek Show's Twitter as well. Or alternatively, email us, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. We have a Patreon, so if you are a generous soul, you can support us for just $1 a month. You know, we can eat.
we're gonna afford to pay for Tucky to come back on the show.
No, no, we don't have to eat the DVDs anymore.
I'm glad that when we get collector's editions in, it means it's all the better meal.
Yes. We have a booklet that we can chew on. So, yeah, for just $1 a month, we can eat. We'll give you a hug if we see you.
We're coming to conventions, so...
Yes, we do come to conventions, so, yes. Anyway, yeah, the Patreon is on our website, and you'll find... Or just go to Patreon and look for The Geek Show. That's us done. So until next time, when Tucky will hopefully be back. I've been Rob.
I've been Mark.
We'll see you all later.
Goodbye.
It doesn't feel right without three people at the end.
It doesn't. It's like we're waiting for somebody else.